There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Hour number two of Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. It is the second Tuesday of the month. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us. I do want to read through just a couple texts before we get started that from the subjects we were talking about last hour with Representative Shane Stringer. Okay, this text here, this is interesting, and I, like Alan called at last hour and said it's the way it's done, that the people bidding these big projects get paid even if they don't get selected. And I will, I use the word before me, use it accurately. I am ignorant to that. It shocks me, but I'm always open to learn new things. This texter said, I worked with an engineering firm for 25 years. I was involved with bidding numerous LDOT projects, and the only time we got paid was if our bid was selected. Now, maybe it is a certain point and certain size project that you get paid. But these are the things that have to be communicated to people. Regular folks, when we hear that you bid a project and you don't get it and you get paid for not getting it, it leaves us shaking our head a little bit. And Sheriff, I'm sorry to throw you off into that world here of this conversation, but I mean, just a regular guy here, I went, say what?
Oh, I know. Me too at first.
Because I'd like to bid that. I will make up some bids here.
Be curious if the program in Birmingham, that exchange, is what, $650 million if it was done the same way.
Yeah, the 5920 or
cutoff
whatever.
Rate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder, maybe we'll look into that and see if they had the losing bids mm-hmm. got paid by the taxpayers. That's interesting. Maybe that's just the way things are done. I'm always open to learning new things, but it was a little bit of a shock to me. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Glad to be here.
A lot to get into here, and folks need to know, if you have not heard, when the sheriff comes by each month, this is your chance to ask the sheriff. So if you have a question, law enforcement question, concealed carry, perfect question. I know we've done that so many times. Or anything else, the man right here who can answer them is in the studio, and we're taking your calls and text at 343-0106. Well, so while y'all get on the line, I've got a series of questions I would ask you. And I started thinking back, the discussion post the dirt bags in Ohio and Texas that murdered people, and it starts to reignites the national conversation about gun control. And I thought back to a conversation you and I have had years ago when another dirtbag went into a movie theater in Louisiana.
That's right.
Killed people in that movie theater.
Sure did.
Person had lived in Alabama.
He had lived in Alabama.
But he got his weapon and his concealed, because what?
I don't think he was a convicted felon, but he had a number of arrests
domestic
on his stuff, and a sheriff in Alabama denied him a concealed carry permit because of his history.
But it didn't show up in Louisiana.
Right. Well, the arrest may would have shown up if they did that, but it was, you know, because the sheriff took a personal interest to, you know, investigate the background,
right.
Decided, no, I'm not issuing this person a concealed carry.
And that didn't, let's use the term, red flag something in another state. Because you were talking back then that one of the things we could do, now we can't solve every crime or prevent every crime, but better communication between the states and getting information like, this person has been an issue over here in this other state. Well, they move over there. We need to make sure that they know that.
That's right. And, of course, that's one of the problems with some of our laws now with concealed carry and the reciprocity between states. You could get a permit in one state and then move, get in trouble, get arrested. And if that other state recognizes that permit, you know, it'd still appear to be legitimate, but...
I mean, can you tell me right now, Lord knows, we can hop on this computer right here and access pieces of information from all over the globe the web is interconnected. I can have a chat with somebody in the outback of Australia right now about, you know, what cattle prices are looking like there this year. Whatever. And we can't get a system that lets, you know, a system that, here's this person in Alabama. Okay, here's somebody trying to, that same person goes to Louisiana trying doing something. Getting that information, the IMS pro Second Amendment as it comes, that's nothing to do but making sure that people that shouldn't have the guns in the first place, with the laws we have on the books, that they're enforced everywhere.
Most of that information is there on the felonies through the National Instant Criminal Background Check, which went into law a few years ago where...
You have to be convicted of a felony, and I want people to be convicted, but... If you have a domestic situation that is preventing somebody in where they live from getting that weapon because of fear they're going to use it for...
Right.
That should ping somewhere else.
It should, but not all of those things are uploaded into the National Criminal Background Information System. Some small cities do not feed their municipal court convictions
into... It's data entry.
It's data entry and connectivity. Now, a lot of that has really improved over the last several years, and the federal government a few years ago was issuing grants to some states that would, you know, update that information. But just as a reminder, remember, just a couple of years ago, we found out that the Air Force and some of the military were not putting it into the National Information System.
And that dirtbag goes into a church in Texas and starts killing people, which, by the way, it was a NRA member and a legal gun owner with an AR-15 that put that man put dirtbag to room temperature.
Only until a couple of years ago in Alabama did the law allow the probate courts to enter those that have been involuntarily committed into a mental institution, which are prohibited from law from possessing a firearm. Less than half the counties in the state of Alabama are even complying with that right now. Yeah. Right. Shocking, isn't it?
Go back and repeat this one more time for folks.
The law, they changed the law where they're supposed to update it to CJIS, the state agency, and then
Somebody who's been committed.
Yeah, someone's been committed, and then that is updated to the National Instant Criminal Background Check. But more than half of the counties in the state of Alabama are not in compliance with that.
Wow.
So 67
Mobile County?
We're compliant.
Baldwin County?
I don't know. I don't want to say one way or the other.
But you're saying half the county?
Yes.
Half the counties in the state aren't?
I know Montgomery's not.
You got to be kidding me.
No. And it has to do with, well, I don't know exactly why. Some probate judges just feel like that's not something that should, you know, whatever. But the law, you know, is there for them to do it. And so
the legislature passed a law and it's not being implemented.
Yes.
So to me, there's a question of a breakdown between the legislative branch and the judicial.
Right. Exactly. We have those
miscommunications. Am I missing something?
Well, you recall a couple of weeks ago, ATF withdrew the ability to use a concealed carry permit in Alabama to be able to go purchase a new firearm.
Right, the thing that we'd always talk about, the fast pass.
Yeah, the fast pass is sort of a benefit, because to issue a concealed carry permit, the sheriff is supposed to, by law, do a National Instant Criminal Background Check. So then if he's got the permit, you know that's been done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out some of the sheriffs, not many, but some of the sheriffs were not complying with it. Mostly, as I understand, some of the rural counties.
So therefore,
what was
we
worse than that, though, as we started looking into that, the sheriffs we met, many of us met a couple of weeks ago, and out of that meeting, we found these other things, that the mentally ill people were not being put in there. Some of the sheriffs were not. We said, well, we can work on fixing the sheriffs, but we can't fix the mental illness. So as a group, the Sheriff's Association recommended that the concealed carry permit not be used as a fast pass. We'd rather, you know, the sheriffs, you know, do their thing, but when someone goes to purchase a firearm, because it could be something that would show up at the last minute on that National Instant Criminal Background Check. Plus, the permit's good for 5 years sometimes.
And then that's one thing. So as somebody who has and long had concealed carry permit, I like that convenience. But if me going back through the full background check when I maybe may or not purchase another firearm, or maybe my first, who knows, when I go do that, if I've got to wait an extra 10, 15 minutes, that's fine. That kind of where I continue to keep my Second Amendment rights, but if I take that inconvenience and that helps maybe, pray to God, prevent something down the road for somebody else,
sure,
I'm in. I'll take that lick.
And listen, if you have a clean record, that background check comes back super fast.
If you have, if you
what
don't have a common
name, down is when there's something on your record, then they have to look at it. Someone's got to, you know, look
and see and make
an interpretation. You know, it may be misdemeanor arrest or something that, that are not prohibitors, but someone's got to make that determination to send to that firearm store or dealer that, yes, it's okay to sell. And, of course, the way the law is now, they have to either give a denial within 72 hours or they can go ahead and sell it. Now, a lot of people don't realize if they buy a gun that they're prohibited from buying, the ATF will eventually come back out and seize that firearm, and you won't get your refund. Well, say you spend $700-$800 on a nice pistol,
right?
And you have something like a domestic violence that pops up after the fact, and then they send it to ATF. They'll come and get the pistol.
All right, I want to. We come back for the break. Talk about this, I guess, in the broader concept of red flag laws.
Yes,
I think there are not 9, 10, or 11 states that are already running with the red flag laws out there. President talking about it, and what can be done at a federal level. We'll get some interpretation from a man that's been looking at this for a long time. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest, and your chance to ask the sheriff at 343-0106. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I'll get Dr. Bob.
Yeah, right. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Your chance to ask the sheriff this hour, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest in the studio. I got phone calls and texts to get to, but I want to ask this question. So the president talking about red flag laws. This is something that you mentioned a couple years ago on this show right there sitting.
Yes, that's right.
Probably in that same chair. I hadn't replaced that chair in a while. But you were sitting in here and you talked about red flag laws in the wake of one of these tragedies.
Exactly. So many, you know, as we study these shootings, these mass shootings and stuff, there's a lot of common denominators run through all that, and one of the ones that stands out is many of these people telegraph what they're going to do ahead of time. Now, some way ahead of time, some maybe 24 hours ahead of time, but many of them, from the school shootings to all these things, they telegraph it. So in essence, that's the red flag. When you see somebody that's threatening about shooting somebody and they have access to guns, you know, the red flag laws allow law enforcement, either with a court order or ex parte, where you do something ahead of time and then you go back to court, to seize their weapons from them until they've been either certified to not be mentally ill or something of this nature. And you know the various shootings where that's occurred. You know, the lady, the Parkland shooting, the mom of the kid called the FBI and several others trying to say, look, this guy's dangerous, my son, he's my own son, and that was a big red flag. But the law there now, Florida has a red flag law, but the law at that time did not allow them to do it. This most recent one, didn't they say he had stopped 40-something times by the police, one of these most recent shooters? So I thoroughly support that. Now, a lot of people don't like the idea that law enforcement could maybe take your guns away without a court order, but if you do, then you go to court, and then the person has an opportunity to go to defend their
It's like a delayed due process. I am bothered by it somewhat because it breaks from the normal order of due process.
Well, not necessarily. Okay. We arrest people for murder, for capital murder, without a warrant. We take them and we put them in jail, and then we go sign a warrant afterwards based on probable cause. We have to sign the affidavit.
But you have that they are, and I may agree with you, but just for the exercise of this discussion, that murder, you suspect that person committed the murder. In the case of red flag law, you suspect somebody might do something. And, you know, so you wouldn't go arrest somebody. You wouldn't go in and arrest somebody because they might murder somebody. Well, right? You wouldn't say,
but you
look at this guy over here. He seems like a hothead. He's probably going to murder somebody the next month. We're going to arrest him, and then we'll get, you know, then we'll go to trial.
How many times does that come true when people say, this guy's going to kill somebody one day? And then, like, yep.
Right.
Happens.
But we are a nation of laws that you have to be, you have to do the thing. This is not the Minority Report, or whatever that movie was, where they get in people's brains and stuff. You have to, you know, just because somebody might do something, it's a tough thing. I agree. I see both sides of it, but it's a tough thing to say.
Oh, I know it is.
You know, that I think, and I would worry about this, that you would have somebody disgruntled with somebody and say, at Sullivan, he's a hothead. I heard him on the radio. Y'all need to go get his guns.
Well, I mean, our system, this is our justice system, allows these things. And the correction of that is false arrest. If I go out and arrest somebody, you know, police officers can arrest people all day long, you know, but they have to do it based on probable cause.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what if I just said, I'm going to just go arrest Sullivan and throw him in jail because I'm mad at him? Well, if I don't have probable cause, you have every right to sue me. And sometimes it's a civil rights violation. You can get, not you sue me, the federal government, you know, bring a civil rights investigation against me, not only take my money, but put me in jail. So
that's the check and balance. Okay.
Now, some states have a red flag where you can't seize the guns until you get like a warrant from a judge first. Say, hey, Sullivan's been walking up down the street saying, I'm going to kill my neighbors one of these days. I've just had enough. You know, and I can't seize your gun or nothing yet, but I can go put that in an affidavit for a judge. The judge says, you know what, Sheriff, I believe you're telling the truth. This man's a danger to society. I want him in my courtroom. Go seize his guns, and then he can argue his case in my court.
Okay, well, we'll continue this conversation about red flags. I'm going to take some calls in intermittent here. Darren is in Moss Point. You're on with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Hey, Darren.
How you all doing?
Hey.
Hey, good. Thank you.
Okay, that's good. Got a question for you, Sheriff. Now, yes. I know you're talking about as far as the being able to do background checks and things of that nature, but this is coming from a, let's say, a private seller's perspective, because I've sold guns in the past, and when I advertise them, I put in big, bold, Helen Keller could see them type of letters saying, you must have a valid gun permit to purchase. Because to me, I'm looking at, like, if you got a gun permit, that means that you've been screened, you've been vetted, you're good to go, so you can get the gun. But I heard you a little earlier saying that, you know, the gun permit might have been suspended or revoked in one state, but you can go to the other state and it might not show up. So my question would be, if I was a private seller and I sold a gun to somebody in that situation, would I as a seller be held liable if that person was to go out and do some kind of crime with the gun?
No. I mean, you're already showing a great level of concern just by requiring them to have a pistol permit. Because, as you probably know, they don't have to have a permit to buy a weapon from you, an individual to an individual. But you're going an extra degree, and that's a great idea to do. I commend you for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my thing is, like I said, I know people in law enforcement, but I don't have the ability to just call them up and say, hey, such and such, I need you to run a check on this person because he's about to buy my Desert Eagle. So that's the reason why I do that, you know, just to kind of cut to the chase on it.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, man, 50 cal? Desert Eagle?
No, actually, it was a couple of years ago, I had a .357 Desert Eagle I got rid of.
Those are beautiful firearms. If I'd ever seen
you're right. You know it, at some point in time, they've had a background check done on Mathuro to have that concealed carry permit, so that's very reasonable to do.
Hey, Darren, thanks for chiming in. We appreciate your call. Leaves line open at 343-0106. It's something I talked about the other day. A friend of mine said this to me last year. And outside concealed carry, let's say people that might not get a concealed carry permit but want to sell long guns back and forth. It was just an idea, and to me, I would like this to be a voluntary idea, but just something when you go get your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, if you would opt for the same check that you do at the sheriff's office for concealed carry, if you go to get a driver's license and they can run it, you know how you have, it'll say driving, motorcycle, vessel, and all that. If you had one other thing for gun or whatever. You, while you're doing your driver's license, run that and just have that additional addendum on your driver's license, so then if I'm selling firearms person to person, then I can ask, like Darren was talking about, he's going to ask for the concealed carry permit, but I could ask for your regular ID. I don't have to do it that way, but I can choose if I want to be a responsible person in that way. I'd say, hey, can I see your ID?
Yeah, that's been discussed from several different
not varieties. Required just a thing right. Like if I want to, like, I'm not required to have a motorcycle or a vessel endorsement on my license either, but I mean, I could say, hey, I want to do this, so I have
your
this
choice thing. To designate on your driver's license whether you have one or not. You could have one and have it listed on your driver's license or not listed on your driver's license.
Sure.
Of course, that those debates have been around in the state within law enforcement and with the Aaliyah for the last couple of years. Aaliyah doesn't want to get involved with the concealed carry permits, and then some people would say, well, I don't want it on my driver's license.
Well, I'm not
say
even saying
an officer stops you.
Sure.
You know, then do you have to tell the officer you have a permit? No, you don't.
But even, let's say it doesn't even qualify as a concealed carry permit. Maybe it qualifies just on the fact that there's been a background check run or something like that. So, like, Derek, you don't have to.
Sure.
You don't have to. But if you choose to, you and I, or, you know, Sean and Sam are meeting, and, you know, you're going to buy an 870 shotgun from me. Say, hey, let me see. like, you don't have to do that, but you do it, and we both look at it, and we agree, you know, that, hey, okay, that, I feel better about this.
Sure. That would be a compliment, because that's one of the arguments, you know, on this universal background checks or tighten up the background checks is that very thing that all of a sudden would require an individual to have to, you know, have a background check on someone that's selling a gun. And,
yeah, that's
and
not
if I want to sell my, not sell, but if I want to give my son one of my firearms,
right,
I don't want the government getting in our business.
Right. And in that case, you know that person.
I know who I'm selling it to or right. giving it to.
But in a way, kind of a proxy, if somebody had that on their driver's license, at least there's some, I'm not saying it's perfect, but there's something there that I say, I feel pretty good about selling that rifle to that person.
Advertise it for sale and say, I'm only going to sell it to somebody that has a concealed carry permit, like the gentleman early did.
There we go. I tell you what, we'll come right back to the phones next at 343-0106. News is next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
I ran out of time during the news break to ask you this, so I ask it on the air. Here's my Ask the Sheriff question. How wide can a vehicle, do you know how wide a vehicle can be in the state of Alabama to be on the road? I've heard, like, in the boat world, right?
Yeah.
Some of these, some of the guys have the big catamaran boats, the big offshore, split hulls, the catamarans, that they're too wide. I know that my buddy Mike Ward, he and I have been fishing together some this summer and just driving his trailer and boat down. Mm-hmm. It is right at the, it's barely between the mayonnaise and the mustard on the lines there. Isn't there, like, it's a certain width and you have to have a what is the blocker vehicle?
You know, the lanes, many of your lanes are 12 feet wide and some are only 10 feet wide, and there's a movement across, and I think we just saw it in downtown Mobile on Water Street where they shrink the lanes, and they're doing it on some of the other streets. It's an idea of how you slow traffic down, the skinnier the lane is.
It'll make you scared.
Yeah, everybody gets scared and kind of squeezing through there. So there's some of these urban planners are recommending that, but I don't know. The Federal Highway Traffic Safety sets the regulations for vehicles and stuff like that.
But I can't have a vehicle. If I have a vehicle without having the oversized load or whatever, and I'm hanging over the line. If I cannot, if my vehicle is wider than the
lanes, it's illegal. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to answer that. See, it's fun to have access to the sheriff and a man with that much law enforcement experience, even when it's something what people figure is pedestrian is lane width. All right. Schmidt in Loosedale up next. Hey, Schmidt.
Hey. Hey, Sean. How's Sheriff?
Hi.
I have a question. I've known several people in law enforcement. I've had friends and family both in it. And whenever we discuss gun law, I've noticed there's a lot of inconsistency. I've heard weird things all the way up to you're not allowed to carry a pistol in Mobile without with one in the chamber. my question to you, Sheriff, is when you get new officers or when new laws come out, how do y'all train your officers that way they all are on the same page with the gun laws? Because when it gets to the realm, of firearms, those laws get very severe and they get, just very, very important very quickly.
Yeah. Most agencies, and say, for instance, the sheriff's office, my sheriff's office, we have an in-house attorney that specializes in criminal law and criminal procedure. And when a new law like that comes out, it'll go to him, and he'll put a legal update out, and it'll go to all of our deputy sheriffs. In addition to that, we have in-service training annually for all of our deputies. Certain things are required that they go back through, but then we rotate other subjects every year, maybe on a 2 or 3 year basis, and so we get them up to speed on that. But the laws are, even though you see laws change, but at the end of the day, there's not that much changes from one year to the next. Now, over the last 10 to 12 years, though, there have been considerable changes with gun laws, but mostly it has to do with the permitting and the background checks and who can issue them and why you can issue them and what you can't refuse them for and stuff like that.
Hey, Schmidt, thanks for the call. From the text line, question for the sheriff, what law protects private companies in Alabama from prohibiting employees with concealed permits from carrying a firearm to protect themselves within a company vehicle? I may or may not need to know if I'll be looking at a felony charge if I ever have to use the pistol that I may or may not have to protect myself during work hours.
Ooh, a lot in there. Let me just sort of talk the law in the state of Alabama that was passed a few years ago, broad encompassing law concerning concealed carry. It allowed you to be able to keep a gun in your vehicle if you go to work, if you had a concealed carry permit, or if you had a hunting
license. In your vehicle, though. Because it says, what law protects private companies in Alabama from prohibiting employees with concealed carry permits from carrying a firearm to protect themselves within a company vehicle? So I guess I get to work and I got to get in the...
What law?
I don't know if that's a company vehicle, like a take-home, or what you drive in during the day.
Well, if the company just has a policy that says you can't carry a gun in their vehicle, then or else you get fired. It's not a criminal offense to carry one in.
It's not a criminal offense.
No.
All right. Let's see. Similar question here. I had a MPD officer tell me my permit does not cover sidearm and ankle holster. Said only one weapon in car and on person. Is that true?
That's not true.
Ever heard that?
No, I don't.
The easiest way, tell folks, it doesn't
apply.
Either
that's not true or he's messing with him.
Yeah, it doesn't. Our concealed carry permit
for any specific pistol. You can rotate a pistol out every day of the week with one permit.
You could have more than one.
You could have more than one. You can have an ankle holster and you have one on your side.
Right. Those. It's the concealed carry permit is for me, not for the firearm.
That's correct.
All right.
And that lingers because many, many years ago, people used to have their serial numbers, have to give it and provide it to the sheriffs or something. But I'm thinking you're back to the 50s or 60s or something when that happened. But that's not been a case in 40 or 50 years.
Okay, this is interesting. So more information on this one. So a take-home company vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And they say to them that it prohibits employees with concealed carry permits from carrying a firearm when they're driving a company vehicle. You're saying there's not a law against that. You get fired. The private business makes its rules. If you violate them, you get fired. But
yeah, if you've got a concealed carry permit, Sean, you can get in any of these cars out here in the parking lot that somebody throws you the keys to and drive away because you've got a concealed carry. It doesn't matter which car or whose car you get in. But just like on some of your schools and all, they prohibit the teachers from having concealed weapon permits, or not having permits, but from bringing a concealed carry onto the school campuses. They get fired, but they can't be charged.
Now, you said the charge that could be brought against you would be trespassing, correct? I mean, if I go into a business, and if you conceal and carry properly, there shouldn't be any reason anybody actually knows.
Even knows it, right?
Right, if you
a
do
few
this,
astute people and some police officers generally, that's kind of scope people
right
out and look for bulges in the right spots.
Right.
And all.
But, I mean, if you're doing it correctly, I mean, it's not, the idea is to truly conceal, not to, almost conceal. So, but if I go in somewhere that says no firearms or whatever, and I go in there and I have a concealed carry, if for some reason it's discovered I have it, they can tell me to leave because it's their private property, but there's no charge.
No charge under those circumstances.
Only somewhere with what? When does it...
You have to have a guard posted there is the only thing that stops a concealed carry permit from being illegal to go in there. However, this is...
Metal detector, guard?
Well, like a guard. But if it's just going in a public building, they can have a sign that says no firearms allowed, but if you have a concealed carry, that doesn't prohibit you from carrying it in there. Now, if they find out you're in there, they can just ask you to leave. Ironically, a few years ago, for many, many years, there was a law on the book that said persons prohibited from carrying firearms on property of another. There was a law that said you couldn't carry a firearm on someone else's property if they had a sign prohibited. Well, they amended the law 7, 8, 10 years ago, and when they amended a particular law, they forgot to put a penalty for what that violation would be. So a gentleman that was charged with having a gun on another person's premises was arrested, convicted, appealed to the Supreme Court of Alabama, and they ruled that the law was no longer effective because it didn't have a legitimate punishment. And there's been no effort to reinstate that law because of the pro-gun lobby up there now that I don't think it could pass.
So a law was put on the books. So this is against the law, and if you do it, we forgot to say what happens. Like there was no penalty.
That's right. There was no penalty. Because many of the laws...
That's interesting. I never thought about
exactly
that.
So it's a state of Alabama Supreme Court case about 7 or 8 years ago. So after that there's no law to charge anybody. So you tell them to get off your property, and if they don't, then they're trespassing, and you have them arrested for that.
You think about circling back on this red flag law discussion. We're coming back to the phones. But circling back to that, we're talking about that, I think... Is it 9 or 11 states?
I thought it was 17.
Okay, well, maybe, hey, listen, you know better than I, but it's not the majority of states, but there are states that have this red flag law in effect. But it's different for different states.
It is. It is.
And I like states to be able to make their own choices, but what the president's talking about, it has to be a federal red flag law, right? How would that work? Would that then be handed down to state, to judges at a state level to be able to...
Yeah, because, I mean... Some constitution attorneys say, you know, but those things are not reserved for the federal government or reserved for the
states.
So I think what you'll see in cases like that, the federal government will pass something that will fund grants for states that will enact red flag laws.
Okay.
And that's the old carrot thing. That's how so many of these type laws are passed, is with the federal government, you know, trying to recommend you do these or that. There are some things the federal government can regulate, and
because they wouldn't be, because you have to have a state law. You can't have, state. Somebody of the judicial branch enforcing a federal law. I mean, we've tried that before. Remember, Alabama tried to enforce federal immigration law. What happened?
Yeah. So we're going to have the big debate probably next month about, you know, the background checks. And part of it's going to be, can an individual still sell a gun to someone without a background check being done on them? And therein lies the fight.
Yeah, big time.
Big time fight.
And I don't know how they, you know, people say, well, it's the gun show loophole. They'll throw that around. There's a lot better chance of getting checked, you know, getting background check run at a gun show than there is, two friends selling guns to each other.
You know, unfortunately, like sometimes when somebody buys a pistol, say, can I call you, sheriff, or call one of your deputies and run a check because I don't want to buy a stolen pistol? Well, the systems we work under that are headed up by the FBI and the state do not allow us. In fact, we could be charged criminally if we were to violate that regulation. Now, it only makes sense in some respects that you don't want to buy a stolen gun, and you'd like to help us get it off the street.
Right.
But we can't do that.
That's frustrating.
Like that, federal law could maybe change, you know, give someone the opportunity to run a check on it.
That is frustrating. I mean, at the same time, we got to keep it balanced, that I don't want law enforcement having willy-nilly going and running background checks on people because they saw them in traffic or they, you know, met them the other day or, you know.
Right.
Has to be for a legitimate reason. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure. Let's go to Roy in Sims up first. Hey, Roy.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This is kind of an iffy question. I think I know the answer, but
okay.
You're not allowed to have a concealed weapon or anything on like a post office or anything like that.
Yeah, there's certain federal buildings you're prohibited from being able to carry a firearm into, and I think the post office is one of them, certainly the federal courthouse and some others.
All right, well, here's the iffy part, I guess I'd say. Say the post office is closed, and all you're doing is checking your box at night, and it's kind of a, you know, situation that you would probably like to have your concealed weapon.
Yeah, I'd carry it in there. I can't imagine you being charged with something like that. An attorney, U.S. attorney, would have to, you know, approve that or something.
Closed.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Closed, and all you're doing is going to check your box late at night.
That's right. And I'll be honest, I don't know for sure if the restriction applies in the post offices, but maybe somebody else, a postman, would know. But a lot of your federal governments are in there. In fact, I went in Social Security office a couple of weeks ago, and I had a concealed pistol on me. I didn't even think twice about going in there.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure a lot of people sitting in their arm, too.
That's right. Roy, we appreciate your call. Let's go to Mike in Baldwin County next. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hey, Sheriff. Got a question to ask you.
Yes, sir.
We got somebody within our family. Don't want to mention his name, but he can't go hunting with us. He can't own a firearm because he wrote a bad check. Basically, they charge him a felony. He made restitution, but he's got that felony charge on his record for the rest of his life for writing a bad check.
Mm-hmm.
He can't own a gun.
That's correct, unless he gets a pardon, and there's a process in which he can get a pardon if he's paid all the restitution back. Now, the bad news is it takes a long time, but you can apply to have your gun rights restored through the State Board of Pardons and Parole. It won't take away the felony conviction, but it will restore his ability to own a firearm. Not many people realize that, and quite honestly.
Oh, I got you.
It was
so
a long time.
He
can, and he can go to the State Board of Pardons and Parole, and there's a spot on the website where you can download it, and then you can also go to the local state and Pardons and Parole Board in Mobile County and file it there. But it will take a couple of years for it to work its way up in the stack to the parole board.
All right, very good. Appreciate the call. We'll come back and get Keyboard calls and texts as we continue with your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. I tell you what, as we continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, I'm going to open up just, Dalton just isolated a couple of the phone lines here and grab caller number 6 at 343-0106 because we had a pair of tickets to go check out Widespread Panic Sunday, September 1st. That show happening at the Pensacola Bay Center. Tickets on sale now. I can go get more information through Pensacola Bay Center, widespreadpanic.com, but that show in Pensacola, August 31st and September 1st, and we have tickets for Sunday, September 1st for caller number 6. All right, the rest of y'all hold on because we'll come to a separate part of the phone lines. I want to ask one question from the text line, Sheriff, and then we'll get to, because this is one we talk. So Dan says, I think the Sheriff's talked about this before, but a very interesting question is, what differentiates an intruder from a tenant or guest, and at what point can you no longer just kick somebody off your property or call the law on them for trespassing?
If you own the property and control the property, an intruder is somebody that comes on uninvited, or you've asked them to leave.
Yeah, well, so the, what if it's your buddy Sean? I come over to y'all's house, and then I end up sleeping on your couch for like 6 months. You had enough of me.
Yeah, then you can be told to leave, and because there's no type of rental agreement or anything like that. You're just freeloading. So anytime the owner of the house wants you gone, you got to get gone.
And if I say no and they call law enforcement,
the police will come help them throw you out. Say, look, bud, you either got one two choices. You can go to jail for trespassing, or you can leave. Now, if you're renting it a room from me, you know,
or have a rental
agreement or something, you know, then you may
different,
be evicted, different situation.
Okay, so there has to be some paperwork for eviction. If there's no paperwork and I'm just hanging out there, then I can, at any point, I can go from being a guest to being a trespasser if
I've been
asked to leave.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We occasionally have things that where someone in a family, you know, someone dies and this person in charge of the estate sometimes has to move relatives out that were just hanging out mm-hmm. there but have no proprietary interest in the house and may want some, but they have none, and that's a sad case. Sometimes you have to just move them out.
It is tough. Bob is in Fairhope. You're on decks. Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Good.
Hey, question for you. So, Sheriff, when I was in the military, you know, we had to go through proficiency training, you know, to be qualified through our firearms training. God forbid, you know, we had to use our firearm, but, you know, what are the laws, or, you know, I've read on blogs, you know, that defense attorneys or whatnot say, hey, you know, just because you had a concealed permit that, you know, you didn't train with it, you didn't have enough hours with it, that they get in some hot water. So where would you find out for a card-carrying member like that, hey, you need to train, you got to have so many hours, you need to do, you know, X, Y, Z to where, when you do, God forbid, have to pull that trigger, that you're not in hot water with the law?
Well, in the state of Alabama, the law doesn't require any level of training to have a concealed carry permit or to own and possess a firearm. Now, you know, people that may work in a business such as security or someone that's doing some work in a work situation, they're the ones that might would have some liability issues if they had not been trained in some manner on how to use the weapon if they're called upon to use it. And of course, in law enforcement, you know, part of our initial basic training is several, you know, a couple of weeks on the firing range, and then annually you have to meet certain standards, and then every year we requalify all of our officers anywhere in the state of Alabama.
Now, but I mean, does that come up often, you know, in a court of law to where they challenge whether or not somebody, just because you had a concealed permit, that they're not qualified to actually have a firearm?
No, I've not heard of it. If it was someone employed, a security guard might have shot somebody, I'm sure they would want to try to subpoena records if they sued, but the Second Amendment rights are just so strong for our citizens that that's just really not an issue. I could see the attorney defending him saying, mm-hmm. You mean you're saying he doesn't have a Second Amendment rights, you know, they're inalienable or something. But
that's right.
So I've just not heard of that coming up.
I appreciate the call, Bob. And by the way, congratulations to JP. Just picked up a pair of tickets to go check out Widespread Panic on September 1st, that Sunday of Labor Day weekend over at the Pensacola Bay Center. Those tickets on sale now. Okay, this text here, this is good. This is the chance. This is what's good about this hour. People get to ask the questions. It said, if a deputy sheriff from Baldwin County is in Mobile County and witnesses a traffic violation, can they stop you and give you a ticket? And is there any case law preventing or allowing such?
If he stops you and you stop and he gives you a ticket, as long as he puts the code for Mobile County and sets up a court case for Mobile County, it would be legal. Because he's a state-certified peace officer and has arrest powers all around the state. But when
so,
an officer
wait,
makes
all the
arrest,
shows we used to watch where it'd be like, it's not your jurisdiction.
Yeah,
you get a stop.
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way? That's just
no,
the TV shows?
You just have to take them to the county seat. So in he couldn't take him back to Bay Minette. He could, you know, and he wouldn't be taking him on a traffic ticket. But he,
right.
He, but, you know, that would sort of be very uncommon for a deputy or a police officer to do that in another city or in another county. We highly stress you don't take action outside of your jurisdiction unless
you've got ever gotten on the radio and communicated with the jurisdiction you're in, said, hey, I'd like to say, even if you're not, I mean, you're just doing whatever, you're, you know, you're in your personal vehicle, whatever, you're not, and you see something, have you ever gotten on the radio and said, hey, I just saw a such and such? Or
sure, I mean, yeah, you can see things, and you know, just your
law enforcement in different areas outside their jurisdiction, do they ever, you know, call that jurisdiction and say, I saw something, y'all need to go check this out, or hey, this is so-and-so.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, that wouldn't be uncommon. I mean, police officers by nature are, you know, looking at stuff.
Right.
And some are much better than others and can just spot very suspicious circumstances and that can lead to a serious arrest.
So, I mean, and I imagine it would be well-received because it's an educated opinion that's coming in to whatever jurisdiction.
And he can answer all the questions that dispatcher may want to relay to their own deputy or police officer. He's going to know exactly what they're going to be wanting to ask him.
It's not like,
you know, what was he wearing, what kind of vehicle, what was the make, model, color, you know, which direction was he going, this or that, you know, any of that stuff that sometimes that's second nature, but it's not always that way to just a civilian.
As always, I enjoy our conversations. And if people want to get more information, what's going on, where do they go?
They can go to our website, like us on Team Sheriff on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download the app, Team Sheriff.
Very good. Sheriff Sam Cochran, thanks for your time.
As always, learn something every time.
That's for sure. All right, I'll be back tomorrow bright and early for Mobile Mornings. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.